The NHL draft is next on the docket now that the cup has been handed out. And we always wait for Bob McKenzie and his final rankings. And I think some heads are going to explode.
Well, he has.
Because Shane Wright is not at number one on Bob's final
doing
list.
Doing him dirty like he did me.
He is causing a stir.
Yes, he is. Here he is, the hockey outsider, our good friend Bob McKenzie. What are you doing here, Bob? Are you causing a stir with the board or what?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I get it. I knew there would be a stir because Montreal, many Montreal Canadian fans have it in their mind that Montreal is absolutely 100% going to take Shane Wright. They should take Shane Wright, and to consider anything else is ridiculous. And what I would say to that would be this. The list is not a prediction, a forecast of who I think Montreal should take or will take. In fact, when the list is put together, the last thing is that there's zero consideration given to which team is picking in which slot. It's not a mock draft. Not a forecast as to which team is going to take which guy. Montreal Canadiens don't even enter into the equation. I interview 10 scouts. I ask them for the numerical rankings of the players. Five scouts said Slavkovský, the big Slovak winger. Four scouts said Shane Wright. Simple as that. They're not saying who they think Montreal is going to take. They're saying our team or me have this guy, Slavkovský, at number one on our list. And so the second point, and I just said it, but it bears repeating, is that it's really, really close. So I often do this. So five guys say Slavkovský, four guys say Wright, one guy says Logan Cooley, and there's my 10. So because it's so close, I'm curious. So now I start calling scouts that aren't normally on the list of the guys that I deal with or whatever, other teams. And I call them, and I say, Slavkovský, you're right. So I start doing that. Now, I do another four or five guys, and guess what? You know, three of the five said it was right. I'm absolutely convinced that if I did another 10 scouts on top of the 10 that I did, that it easily could have been five for Wright, four for Slavkovský, one for Cooley. It's that close. So I don't really understand why anybody would get bent out of shape. And yet, you know, I don't want to undercut it and say the ratings don't mean anything because, in a manner of speaking, when it's that close, they don't. But that's not probably the smartest thing for me to say.
You're an outsider now, Bob.
I'm a terrible salesman, but that's the reality. The reality is it's very, very close. And, you know, and I don't know what Montreal is going to do. And if anybody who says they do know what Montreal is going to do, I don't think they know. And so, you know, could Montreal take Wright at number one? Absolutely. Could they take Slavkovský? Yeah, absolutely. And could they take somebody else? I don't think so. I think it'll be one of those two guys. And we'll find out next Thursday, Wednesday, Thursday, whatever day it is, the draft time.
When you're thinking about who Montreal's going to take, Bobby, you have to wonder how much sense taking Shane Wright would be. And just like Jim Taddy, we used to talk about duplicate players. Like, they already have Suzuki there, who's a right-handed shot, who's an extremely well-rounded player. Do you need one of kind of the same coming in there at the number two hole? I don't know how much sense that makes. So something different, a dynamic left-handed skater, a shooting, I don't even know what this guy is, power forward. Gord Miller described him as somewhat Jagr-like. That would interest me. That would excite me to have kind of that different element.
Well, what I would say to that, though, is that I learned a long time ago from talking to so many scouts, when you're picking first overall, you take the best player available.
Sure.
Now, you don't draft for position at number one. You just don't. Unless it's such a coin flip, it's such a jumble, and this year very much looks like that. So you could err on the side of taking a position player. But at the end of the day, the scouts, your chief scout, and or your general manager. The general managers obviously get involved in this stuff, especially with the first overall pick. It's an organizational thing. You've got to make a quantifiable decision. Who's the best player? Is it clear-cut who's best? And if it's not clear-cut, who do we like best? And just go ahead and take it. And don't worry about the position. But this might be a draft where you can default to a position a little bit more than you otherwise would. the thing about both these guys is, and this is one thing nearly all the scouts agree on. Right now, I would say the projection, the consensus projection amongst the vast majority of scouts I talk to, is that Shane Wright projects to be a number two center in the National Hockey League. Could he be a number one? Sure, he could develop into that. But right now, the projection is he's probably, you know, a high-end number two or a low-end number one. In Slavkovsky, right now, the vast majority of scouts, the strong consensus is this guy's a top six, going to be a top six NHL winger. But like Wright, he has enough tools that he could become a first-line left winger. And oh, to your point, I mean, you're right. There's times, the first time I saw Slavkovsky was at the World Juniors in a couple of years ago, and as soon as I saw him, I go, oh my God, he looks like Jágr. He's really big, he's got a big backside. At that time, he had the hair flowing, he had the Jágr mullet going the whole nine yards. And it was in the first time we went to Edmonton for the World Juniors. And I'm looking at him going, wow, Jágr, and he was scoring some goals and shooting the puck and just looked a lot like him. But here's the reality. He played in the Finnish Elite League this year. And for most of the year, he was stuck on two goals. Now, the Finnish Elite League is a hard league to put points up in. But if you want to talk to scouts about reservations, you know, he lit it up in the Olympics. He lit it up at the Senior Men's World Championship. And that really clinched it for a lot of teams that were watching him. But they also have reservations about the lack of offense that he produced on a consistent basis in the Liga in Finland. And it's the same deal with Wright. Talk about reservations. They can see all sorts of comparisons. Oh, he's a great all-around player. He's a high-end number two or a low-end number one and a consummate team player and a great thing. But he didn't score as many goals this year in the OHL as he did when he was 15 years old, 2 years ago. What's with that? You know, he still had 93, 94 points, whatever it is this year. Didn't have a bad year. But there were a lot of scouts that walked out of the building on many nights this year watching him play where they were like, boy, would have liked to see him compete a little harder. Would have liked to see him score a few more goals, assert himself a little more. So both guys have attributes that guarantee they're going to be NHL players. Could even be first-line players, but no guarantee on that front. But they've also created enough question marks over the course of this season where you can't be all in and say, oh, this guy's in it. This is not Austin Matthews or Connor McDavid. It's not even Steven Stamkos or John Tavares or so many of the number one overall picks that we've seen in the past. This draft is at the top end, is a notch down from what we're used to in those situations.
Bobby, no goaltenders. It seems like you've got to look very, very far down the list to see, I think it's Tyler Brennan at 62. Just a leaner year for goaltenders or more hard? Obviously, plus, you know, drafting goaltenders at such a young age, we're seeing a lot of those goaltenders, you know, don't get mature until 25 or 26. Is it just a leaner year?
Yeah, it certainly is. And, you know, I can't imagine that there's going to be a goalie taken in the first round. That hasn't happened since 2018. I would have guessed it was even longer than that. When the quizmaster told me, I said, hey, when was the last time there was no goalie in the first round? And I was expecting him to say, oh, it was like 22 years ago or something. And because it just seems like there's goalie, you know, Demko and Ottinger and all these guys, even back to Jack Campbell and whatever. It just Vasilevsky and all these guys. And I'm like, Samsonov and... I'm thinking there must be a really long time since there's been no goalie taken in the first round. And Quizmaster said 2018. I'm like, oh, okay. So how much I know? Boy, I'm the outsider. But we only have two goalies. We rank 90 players plus 10 honorable mentions, and the only two goaltenders that made the 90 were Tyler Brennan from Prince George at 62 and. Topias Laine and a Finnish goaltender, I think it's at 71. So, yeah, just an off year for high-end goaltenders. And that's not to say those guys couldn't go on to become big-time goalies. Because lots, you know, I think somebody said Shesterkin was drafted X number of years ago today, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever it was. You know, when they took him 178th overall or some crazy number like that. I don't think anybody envisioned him as a Vezina Trophy winner. But that's just the nature of your position, Noodles. They're all crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Impossible to get a read on with Bob McKenzie. Are you still on the Hall of Fame voting committee, Bob? I can't remember.
Yes,
you are.
I'm still on the selection committee.
Okay.
I was there yesterday and took part in the festivities.
Okay. I know none of it really gets out in terms of where people stand individually, but can you take us behind closed doors in terms of maybe the heat of the conversation, the energy in the room? Like, what's it like when there's a disagreement on a player?
Yeah, you know what? I guess what I would say, I think what I'm permitted to say is just about the process. And it's no secret. There are a lot of people who say the process shouldn't be confidential. It should be wide open. Tell everybody how everybody voted, the way I believe Major League Baseball does with, you know, in media ballots and what have you. Hockey's chosen to go in a different direction. They asked me to be part of the committee. I said, sure. They told me what the rules are for confidentiality, and they said, you know, you have to respect the rules, and this is what we're all about. And I'm like, okay, fair enough. If you want to be part of it, then you go in eyes wide open. These are the terms and conditions under which you go in. And what I've heard many people say, Lanny McDonald, who's involved with the selection committee, is a non-voting member. In the past, John Davidson, who is the chairman of the committee as a voting member, and now Mike Gartner, who's the chairman of the committee as a voting member. And one of the things they've always stressed is they're comfortable with what they, you know, the whole secrecy element, not because the conspiracy is silent, but because they believe that promotes really honest assessments of players. And so you've got a cross-section of people, 18 people on the committee, and they're asked, people ask them for their opinion, they offer their opinion, and in many cases, they're offering opinion on former teammates, they're offering on opinion on players they played against, they're offering opinions on whatever. And the only thing I would say is that because the process is as confidential as it is, the candor that is there is absolutely incredible. And I don't believe anybody holds anything back. So in answer to your question, I would say the 18 people in that room go in and are very earnest and truthful and pointed in their remarks, both positive and negative, on various players, because that's what they're there for. That's the whatever level of expertise they're perceived to have, that's, you know, you want honesty from people, and that's a good way to get honesty. So, as I say, those are the rules, and if you're part of it, you abide by it.
How, I guess, gratifying is it to be a part of that committee to send someone like Herb Carnegie into the Hall of Fame, which I think many have argued is long overdue, but he goes in the builder category, Toronto hockey legend, I'm sure, obviously, you're aware of. That's a pretty cool story.
Yeah, it really is. It really is, and you're right. And it's a funny process because You really are, you know, as somebody who's always around hockey and lived your life in hockey, and all 18 members of the committee, they all have different roles in the game, but everybody has a passion for the game, and they love the game, and the history of the game, and the future of the game. And so there's this really great, when it's all done, and the various players have been inducted, there is a tremendous sense of pride and excitement for those players, because you know that their day, their life just got a lot better. They're getting a phone call from Lanny McDonald or Mike Gartner telling them that they're in the Hall of Fame. You can't even imagine what it's like for, you know, next to winning a Stanley Cup, which is, you know, the ultimate honor in the National Hockey League. I don't know that there's another thing that would be as individually, you know, create a sense of pride for a career achievement as being in the Hockey Hall of Fame. So you feel good about those. And conversely, you know, you, as you go through and you see the people who didn't make it, you know, you have pangs of, wow, that's really, especially if it was somebody that you were promoting or nominating or whatever the case may be, you're kind of cheering for that to happen. And if it doesn't happen, you're like, I'm a little vested in this now and I feel bad for that person, but that's just the nature of the beast. But as far as Carnegie goes, I think it's absolutely fantastic. And I really think it's essential for our game that we continue to try and build a bigger tent and invite more and more people to be part of it. That's the future of the game. and we want to make sure that that, you know, the level of diversity and inclusivity is infinite, and that every opportunity to expand the horizons and make everybody who's interested in being part of the game of hockey feel more welcome, and being able to amplify the story of Herb Carnegie, a player who was good enough not only to play in the National Hockey League, but some would suggest maybe star in the National Hockey League back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. You know, a little-known fact about Herb Carnegie is that he probably was good enough, if the NHL had been ready to take him, where he would have beat Jackie Robinson in terms of being the guy that breaks the color barrier for professional sports in North America. The Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier for the Brooklyn Dodgers didn't happen until the late 40s. Herb Carnegie was good enough and in a position to be in the National Hockey League in the late 30s, early 40s. And can you imagine how hockey history would have been different, how sporting history would have been different if somebody in the National Hockey League had done what Branch Rickey did with Jackie Robinson and paved the way for that player to go against the values and norms of society at the time, of the various professional leagues. So everybody knows Willie O'Ree was the first black player in the National Hockey League, the first black player in the National Hockey League, taking nothing away from Willie O'Ree. Should have been Herb Carnegie.
Bobby, Hayes just said the term long overdue. Has there been any talk in the future of, like, not having the situation where someone's been waiting? It's like they have a certain time frame early on where they either get in or they don't. You just see players that have been waiting around too long, or it seems like it's too long. Has there ever been talk of the format changing where it's like you got a 3-year span, and if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen?
No, I think they leave it open-ended on that, and quite frankly, you know, we've seen, and some people might not understand the dynamic, and I'm not sure even I could explain it, but, you know, Doug Wilson got in a recent class, and he's been retired for an awfully long time, and obviously didn't have the requisite support or whatever, but every year is a little bit different. Sometimes there's a whole bunch of slam dunks that are first ballot guys, and that's that, and then some years there's not, and you're looking at it, and you're saying, well, we don't have to put anybody in if we don't want to. You're not obliged to put a player in.
Yeah.
But
the argument, on the other side of it, Bobby, is some people say if you got to wait that long and people have to vote that many times and you're not a Hall of Famer, maybe the idea that you're not a Hall of Famer is tossed out there.
Yeah, I suppose that's entirely possible, but I just think the less rules you put on things, everything can happen organically because, you know, what if people on the selection committee make mistakes? And I'm sure it happens. Everybody's human. So, but what about the dynamic? You've got to get 14 of 18 votes, 75% majority. And I always joke and say, if you think it's easy to get 14 of 18 people to agree on anything, get 18 of your best friends and just decide where you're going for lunch. See if you can get 14 to agree. And then do it with hockey players and their careers and everything else that goes into it. And again, the other thing is the criteria. There's no handbook that says, if you do this, 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 and this, you're a Hall of Famer. Because there's some guys that play the game for a really long period of time, and they put up an enormous number of goals, assist points over a long period of time. But, you know, they've never won individual awards, and they've never been an all-star, and that. So how do you balance that against somebody who has lesser numbers but won a Hart trophy or won a couple of Norris trophies or was a first and second team All-Star 4 or 5 times but didn't put up the numbers that somebody else did because maybe they only played for 10 or 11 years instead of 20 years? So there's a million things that go into to try and figure it out. And there's no handbook that says this number of goals or this number of points will get you in. And because you just can't do it that way. And so it is, I'll admit, it's an imperfect system. But as I say, if you said to somebody, you only got 3 years to get in, so you got to wait 3 years until you're retired. Okay, now you're eligible. If you said you've only got 3 years to get in the Hall of Famer, you're not a Hall of Famer. Well, maybe that collection of 18 guys and men and women who will change over a period of time, and so it's a different perspective of people. Maybe the next wave of people that are on that committee are a lot smarter than the ones before, and maybe they've had reason to readjust their thinking on something. So I think it's always better to have less rules than more rules, because I think more rules just ties your hands. And at the end of the day, I always say, if they're meant to be Hall of Famers, they'll find 14 of 18 people that agree in any given year.
Always great. You
haven't voted me
Bob.
In, Bobby.
Yeah, just a matter of time.
Well, we're not allowed to talk about it because it's a very confidential process. But
it's possible. It could
you're a Hall of Famer, Bobby. That's all that matters, pal. Right, buddy. Thanks.
Good catching up with you.
I am not a Hall of Famer. I couldn't even have made the Hall of Fame for juvenile hockey in Toronto.
Well,
you had the hockey hair. True.
Yeah, exactly. You look like a hockey player. That's all that matters. That's all we have
going
for.
That's all that matters. As when I covered the Sioux Greyhounds, there was a guy by the name of Perry Ardito from Sault Ste. Marie. He was a pretty funny kid. I think he ended up back in the day when he could play junior hockey and then go to college. So I think he ended up going to the University of Minnesota briefly after he played for the Sioux Greyhounds. And he was an impeccable aggressor on and off the ice. And on the ice, he was one of those guys. Every bit of tape on his shin pads was perfectly synchronized. I think he probably was like, that he was looking for his reflection in the glass in the warm-up. And he once uttered one of the great lines that I ever heard. And he says, "You know, Bobby, it's not whether you win or lose, but how you play the game, how you look."
He's on to something there. That applies to all walks of life, Bob. You know that. Thank you for this, buddy. We'll do it again real soon.
Awesome. Thanks, boys.
Bob McKenzie, our TSN hockey outsider. Now, he's on the inside of that vote.
Yeah.
The Hall of Fame, though.